Hi, welcome to The Left Brain Artist. I'm Suzanne Redman. This is my 8th artist interview. Thank you to everyone who has downloaded my podcast and listened to it. That means a lot to me. And if you really like what you're hearing, stop by iTunes and leave me a review. My artist today is Elaine Kelly. You know, I try to make my interviews conversational. I'm not just asking a list of pre-written questions. But even though I still go rather chronological through an artist's life as they explain how they got from making crafts with their mom to being a professional artist today. But frankly, Elaine blew my chronological interview strategy out of the water. She's done so many things, but always so many things at once. So just keep that in mind. When she says she worked the art show circuit for 20 years and she ran an art district for 20 years and art galleries for 20 years, recognize that everything was overlapping because Elaine is a woman who is filled with ideas and always busy in creating something new. The other thing about this interview is she goes deep into a discussion about creativity. She's obviously thought a lot about this, and she has some really interesting things to say. So here we go. This is Elaine Kelly. Welcome. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, I'm so happy to finally meet you in a conversation because I've known about your art for many years.
Yeah, and we've been Facebook friends for a long time.
So. Yeah, right. And now Florida friends in that you're on the West Coast and I'm on the East Coast. So you're in the St. Petersburg area.
Mm-hmm. And loving it.
Yeah. Good. Yeah. Do you have the afternoon thunderstorms like we do?
Oh, absolutely. And I grew up here. And I moved away for a long time, but just getting back. And that's what I remember most is those afternoon thunderstorms. They're pretty dramatic.
They are. They're dramatic. We're in a, it's like a 4-week kick of them already. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, why don't we start out by you telling me when did you start making art, and did you go to school for art? How did it all start for you?
All right. Well, I am writing a book right now called Craft Your Creative Life, and it's a teaching memoir, and it talks a lot about this. But I crafted when I was young with my mom a lot. We did hand-built pottery and just all kinds of, you know, sewing and things like that. And my Nana, my first thing was like sewing with my Nana when I was really young. I was very spontaneous about it. And then I reached this point of just kind of feeling stagnant. And I think it was like all my stuff of perfectionism and procrastination and all. So I went to school and I was going to major in art. In my very first art class, the teacher had us get in a circle and he's like, we're going to draw an egg. And I raised my hand. I'm like, well, I'm not so interested in drawing an egg today. And he goes, well, in this class, we're drawing an egg. And I got up and left and changed my major to sociology and went on that path.
Wow.
But I still had a calling and a passion to let art flow through me again. But I just kept staring. Like, a friend bought me all these Liquitex paints and canvas, and I just couldn't even make a mark. And
oh, wow.
Yeah. So the book is kind of like my journey in finding my creativity and creative flow. And it's kind of like the belief and premise that I have about us being creative beings and what keeps us from that.
That's
back
great.
Into the flow.
Yeah, absolutely. What is your dream publishing date of this book?
It'll probably be spring of 19.
That's great. Well, congratulations. I know that's a huge undertaking.
Oh, it
but
is.
It must be fun to go through the process and look back at the path that you've taken.
It is. Yeah, because, I mean, the older we get, we realize, like, how many things we've done and how many journeys we've been on and, you know, all the unfolding and
right.
You know, unpacking and letting go of and adding on to, you know, just the story of our lives. And
right. Absolutely. Yeah. Ongoing.
Yeah.
So you ultimately received a degree in sociology then?
I did. I have a background in mental health. But when I moved from this area, St. Pete area, to California and started working on a master's in transpersonal counseling psychology. And it was just a very super, super creative. It was so different than traditional mental health. You know, we did like crystal rock gazing instead of Rorschach tests and
oh, great.
That. And so I had like lots of amazing mentors and spiritual teachers and things. Moved from there to Hawaii, and that's when I just started painting clothes. And just in a few days, I just produced all these hand-painted clothes and sheepishly took them to a store right in Lahaina, right on the main road, and all they sold was hand-painted clothing. And he bought everything I had, and the next day I went before they opened, and the whole window was done with my art.
And oh gosh, that must have been so exciting to see.
It was so affirming, you know, it was just whoa. And that, you know, that started my career in
wow. But you were still doing your day job of counseling?
When I was there, I did not graduate. I almost graduated, and then I went to Hawaii for vacation, met the chef at a resort, and ended up moving to a resort in Hawaii, in Lahaina. And living.
Oh, gosh, that's what a story.
Yeah, painting.
Oh, okay. I went to Hawaii for my honeymoon. We went to Maui. And it was probably the same time period, so I may have even seen your clothing, but my sister-in-law went there as a traveling nurse for 6 months, and she stayed 12 years. Yeah. So I get that, what you did.
It's pretty wonderful, for sure.
That's nice. Yeah. So did you end up putting your clothing in multiple stores or on different islands?
Well, we ended up moving back to this area before I moved again. And I started a whole clothing business, and then I started making what I call gaudy jewelry to go with all the clothing. And I started doing the art show circuit here. It was really, my stuff was well received right from the get-go. And I was about the only person in Florida painting clothing at the time. So my booth was just flying with hangers, and, you know, it was crazy good in the beginning.
Oh, that's wonderful. So when you say the art show circuit, you mean outdoor art shows with a 10x10 tent, all that?
And I did that for years, probably 20 years. I mean, I still have a tent downtown, but I have somebody else do it. I don't do it.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah. The art show circuit is physically demanding.
So,
you know, setting everything up and driving from place to place. And, you know, I'm sure you had lots of clothes. At least they're a little lighter weight than ceramic artists who are doing the art show circuit. But yeah, that's a big deal. And you did that for how many years?
Probably at least 20 years. And that wasn't just clothes. Transitioned into plaques and tiles, you know, artwork that I was doing. Out of clothing and, you know, into plaques and tiles and jewelry. And it's really hard because when they're good, they're great. And when they're bad, they're awful. I always tell people that, you know.
Oh, yeah.
You can get all set up. And then in Florida, you know, the sky opens up and you're drenched. That was my very first show experience was
booked
to Tallahassee and was set up for this huge event. And I had just built a new booth, and it was great. Well, I had dyed the sheets kind of mauve in the background and put it on lattice work. It started.
Oh, nice.
I didn't have a tent, and the dye was bleeding all over my clothes.
Not
a penny had driven. That was my very first, you know, out of the gate show. And I thought,
oh gosh.
When it can't get any worse, it can only get better.
Well, that's a great positive attitude, because that could have discouraged lesser people.
Yeah, it was pretty intense.
Yeah. I was at an art show, the Space Coast Art Festival in Cocoa Beach, and I was in there, and we got a tornado warnings, and the poor artist, and I was in a booth, and the artist said, "We're hearing rumors that they're shutting us down because the storm is coming." and they're all talking to one another. Is it true? Do we shut down? Because you can't shut down until you get the official word.
Right. You know, you can't do that. Vehicles in, and everybody's panicking, and...
Oh my gosh. And so that's what it was. It was panicking. And then they got the word. And then, so I get in my car. I was just an attendee, and I get in my car and leave, and we're getting the alarms on the radio that there's a tornado coming. And I thought, oh, those poor artists, because it's not quick to take down.
No. And it looks so glamorous. Doing art shows, being an artist and doing art shows looks like it's a really glamorous thing.
Right.
And I remember having that feeling, like, how cool would that lifestyle be? You know, how awesome. And then you're doing it and you're like, you know, exhausted and you didn't sleep well and you're, you know, weary and, you know, all those things.
And the sun is baking.
Well, yeah. I've had heat stroke. I've had, you name it, you know, gosh. Your car breaks down. There's good parts to it. And then there's other parts that are just always new and you have to go with it. You know, if you're going to do it, you just have to roll with whatever it is.
That's great. Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's one thing. Artists, you'll hear people sitting in their booths complaining about, you know, and it's just like, no, ain't got no time for that. You know, art's to make people feel good. And, you know, you buy onto that. When you buy into any kind of job, and, you know, it's different. It's like, I didn't even realize for probably about 20 years that I was doing art for product and not art for process. And I think a lot of us don't understand that. You know, it's like we have this grand idea that we're going to make a living doing art. But the art that we're most in tune with is when the art just flows out of us. And then so say it flows out of us and then we start producing it. You know, we're doing a product and we're doing a product for sale. It becomes totally different than just kind of like channeling it, learning from it, growing from it, letting it. Take us wherever it goes. It's like, will this product sell? That's what it becomes. And for people to be really clear with, am I in this for a business? Do I want to be a production artist? Which a lot of artists, you know, they're two different sides of your brain. And
You
know, love is like the drawing from the right side of your brain and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
But the business of art is a very left brain beast.
Sure. Yeah.
And so you're hopping on two horses at once and you don't even know it and feeling split because you're wanting to be in the studio, but you know, your reps need to be paid. Your road reps need to haven't written checks. You know, what's your bank balance? Oh my God, I got to check. And you end up a lot of time in front of the computer. You know, what's my next business? What show am I going to apply for? What gallery am I going to apply for?
Right. Always looking ahead, what's 6 months down the road.
Right, which seemingly has nothing to do with art. It can translate to any business that you're doing. Those are the things that you have to look for. Have I paid my sales tax? Have I, you know, done all of those things? Have I signed up for the shows? Do I have enough income coming in? You know, and it's not easy. And it's not easy because a lot of people are drawn to the arts because they are not business people. You know, they know.
Right.
And so to become it, you know, go in with your eyes wide open.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So what was it that made you end that part of your career doing the art show circuit? What was your next venture?
Well, I have had so many art ventures. To digress, I moved from this area to Tallahassee and I was up there for 25 years. And what job did I have first? I became kind of by happenstance Florida's disaster mental health coordinator. So I had this enormous job of dealing with every time a disaster hit, I would write millions of dollars worth of grants and I've pretty much run every disaster grant besides Andrew in the state of Florida. So my left brain works really well, you know, which is art.
Oh, gosh.
But at the same time I was doing that, I owned four art galleries called Wow Women Gallery, and they were in different parts of Florida.
That's nice. Okay.
Yeah, so I would leave on weekends, and I had two business partners, and I would leave on weekends, and we would have staff for during the week, and then we would go and work on weekends at our art gallery. And so,
oh, boy. And was that also called Three Hip Chicks?
That was at, Hip Chicks was, came later. That was...
it came later.
Wild Women Gallery.
Okay. Wild Women Gallery. Yeah. And Are any of those still in existence?
No, we might be resurrecting one in the Seaside area.
Because we
had one up there and could be happening. But I had it with two sisters that I just absolutely adore. And, you know, we're still really close and good friends. And
that's great.
That is a possibility.
Very nice. Yep,
ventured.
And then around that time, you started the Railroad Square Art Park in Tallahassee. Tell me about that.
I actually left my job, or just started consulting with the state. I left a job as the head of it all. And then when there was disasters, I would just consult and hop on when there was disasters and, you know, write the grants and run the programs. But I got a job, and it was a woman who had this vision of taking an industrial park. And it's, if you go to www.railroadsquare.com, it's one of the biggest artist communities in the United States. And it's getting to be a lot more business oriented now. So when she hired me, it was just like funky, you know, white kind of dilapidated, you know, buildings and stuff. And I'm like, can I funk this place up? And she's like, you know, have at it. And So I did, you know, it was just like building a tribe and a community there. And it was already, you know, going, but it was not all that it could be. So I got to grow it. And it was interesting because her name was Nan Boynton, the woman that started it. Mm-hmm. And 3 years after she hired me, she passed away, and her children, who were 16 and 18, inherited the art park. All of a sudden, my bosses, so to speak, were, you know, 16 and 18 year old. Still, you know, have a wonderful journey together. And I worked there for 15 years.
Oh, very nice. I've actually been there when I visited Tallahassee.
Oh, cool. How long ago?
Yeah. I would say maybe 10 years ago.
Wonderful.
Maybe 10 years ago. Yeah. I'm trying to think, or it was 5 years ago. I've been to Tallahassee a couple of times, and I know my son visited FSU, and then ultimately he went to UF, but visited a few when we were doing the tours around the state of Florida. But yeah, I remember going to it, and I thought it was tremendous.
Yeah. You know, we started a gallery hop, which like 7,000 people would come on First Friday for the gallery hop.
Gosh.
And so it was a vital life. My nickname was the Den Mother, you know, and so it was you know, nurturing, and people would come to me with their, you know, dreams of being an artist and, you know, doing this thing. And I would try to help them kind of get grounded in it. Like, you know, are you going to be able to pay for your home expenses as well as this expense? And just really try to, ground them is the best way that I can say. So I felt like, in that way as well. You know, a coach, I just use my coaching skills to help them.
Right.
So that, because, I mean, I've started businesses. I started a place down here long ago with my ex-husband, a restaurant and gallery kind of thing. And, you know, we lost a buttload of money, and it can happen really fast, you know. So if you don't have kind of that business plan and just following your dreams, but maybe, you know, there's like, there's baby steps that
Or tone down your dreams at the start.
Subsidize them in different ways, which I'm always an advocate for artists to do. It's like, especially if you want to be like a more process oriented artist, it's like subsidize your life in a way. Can you work 15 hours a week at something and live simply until you can grow what you want to be growing? You know, do you want to stay in just doing fine art? That's you know, a long haul, and there's steps to doing it. But to not feel like you have to make your money in art right away. I think it can take away our creativity, and it can make us feel defeated. And so it's like, how do I stay happy in what I'm doing? You know, and or do I want to have a career and make this is just, you know, what I do because I love it, you know, I love it and I, you know, what's coming through me instead of feeling like I've got to make, you know, money at it. And,
right. And I think nowadays there's, you've been an entrepreneur all your life, it seems, but I think, that's unusual. And I think the entrepreneurial spirit is much greater as a nation now, where people are looking to start their own businesses. And I think artists have realized that you're not making 100% of your income from selling a painting.
Yes.
You're making your income from selling prints and teaching and yes. traveling and teaching, or being commissioned to paint a mural on the side of a building, you know, all kinds of things. And yep. so it's not just a cookie cutter role of the artist, or rather the traditional, yeah, I'm sitting at home and I'm making a bunch of paintings and bringing them to a gallery. Well, most people aren't.
No.
Most people
aren't.
And
a lot of people that
aren't
getting paid by the galleries. You know, I mean, there's yeah. stories of, you know, galleries, a lot of them are living marginally as well. So if they're not town. I mean, I know big time artists that, you know, you only get 50%. Some big galleries
right.
pay you 40% of what they're selling
mm-hmm.
for
yep.
$10,000. You get $4,000, and then they're marginally.
Right.
So they have spent that money, and then the artist has to go, okay, well, am I going to drive to New Orleans to collect my money? You know, those
right.
are stories mm-hmm. that we don't like to hear, but we hear, and they're, you know, they're real. And so putting all your
yeah.
eggs in that one basket of, I'm going to pay my mortgage by that $4,000 that's going to come to me, it might not, you know, it might,
right.
even though it's owed to you, it might not come to you. And those are
right.
the hardcore business things that then you have to become a collection agency on top of everything else. You know?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Because, yeah, you know, you've got to look at it that you've got this income pie, and there's going to be a lot of slices of that pie. You've got to get the income from many different sources, so you're not relying on one gallery. Like you said, all your eggs in one basket.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like I have now, my national business is Choose Good Thoughts, and I've been a
right.
licensed artist with Choose Good Thoughts and stuff. So I bet this month, like I had to, I don't even have my jewelry on, but oh yeah, I got a little neck. Oh, well, nobody sees it here, but.
That's okay.
I loaded up with, you know, more greeting cards. That was $1,000. I needed more. I get pewter charms. I design them and have them made. You know, that was another $600. And then, you know,
right.
paying. And so then at the end of the day, if you're not a great business manager, which I must admit that I have not been over the years, because I run more on passion than, you know,
that's the artist side.
And it's the chasing shiny objects. Like, you know, I had a coach telling me yesterday, you know, your biggest thing is ahead of you. And so now you're spending all this time with your little businesses, so to speak, you know, and then it's like,
I got you.
People mm-hmm. love my greeting cards and people
right.
these plaques and tiles. And how can I just end that? But sometimes the
yeah.
decisions that we have to make, because when we do split ourselves in so many ways, we don't have kind of the wind at our back, you know, because we are distracted in so many ways. So.
Yes. Yes. And that is just such a left brain concept to understand things like margins and the cost of your time. And what is the profit margin you're making on greeting cards versus something else that's $1,000 item, $1,000 income coming to you.
And
you're balancing that with the risks. Like you said, will the person buying the $1,000 item actually pay me? And you're balancing all those things, but you can't just, again, you can't rely on one thing.
Yeah.
So let me back up a little bit. The Railroad Square Art Park, what did you move on to? You know, I'm trying, you know, you're not helping me out here, because I'm trying to go chronological
right, no,
and look at the steps, and you are doing so many things all the time that
yeah.
there, you don't have a timeline that goes in a straight line, because you have about 10 timelines.
No, you'd be exhausted if you tried to keep up. So it's like,
yeah.
I had a bout with high blood pressure this week. It's like, okay, my mantra is simplify things, and it is the hardest thing, I think, for artists to do, is to
yeah.
just simplify things, because we love life. We are creative beings, and we all are creative beings, period, absolutely.
Right.
But
right.
there are so many ways to be creative. So what did I
yes.
leave Railroad mm-hmm. Square for? What I left Railroad
yes.
Square for was that I still have my home in Tallahassee and a
okay.
community there. But my mom was down here, and she had been diagnosed with Alzheimer's, and I had been keeping her home for like 7 years and paying people to come in and, you know, take her grocery shopping and stuff. And it was getting worse and more evident that I needed to make a decision, you know, do I want to help my mom die? Do I want to be there till the end with her? And I made that decision, you know, a couple of decades ago that was something that I did want to do. And so I rented my home of 25 years that I built in this community in Tallahassee. And so I still, you know, have that. And then left her at Square, which was a hard thing to do. I was going back and forth for a while and came down
So you made your move to West Florida in the St. Petersburg area.
Right,
That's not a quick drive commuting to Tallahassee to keep your interest going up there.
I was driving back and forth like every 2 or 3 weeks, and I had 18 animals that I was, you know, schlepping with me a lot.
We love the animals, but they do complicate our lives.
Especially when they age. Oh my goodness. Oh my
goodness. Oh gosh.
So it's so interesting because I went from being so known in Tallahassee, like I couldn't walk two steps anywhere. It was hard for me like to even go to a gallery hop if I just wanted to go enjoy it, because most of the time that I worked it. But if I had, you know, because I would take two steps and everybody would have like five questions or try to hand me their rent check or, you know.
Well, Tallahassee, it has a small town feel. Yeah. It really does, despite being our capital city.
Yeah. So there was no place that I was invisible or incognito. So coming down here was so interesting because I grew up here and I didn't even until I was 25, but you know, most people didn't know me. So, I mean, I go to concerts, you know, now and there'll be God knows how many people there and nobody knows me. So I went from this complete
disability
as an artist and a, you know, Florida's disaster mental health coordinator and all of that, gallery owner and all of that stuff to being invisible. And it was definitely what I needed.
It,
you know, it was by choice because I know how to get known quick, you know, if I want to. But my three animals had, you know, I was helping them transition, doing home deaths for them, doing, you know, transition my mom out of here. So I went tremendous loss over a small period, you know, a period of time. And so it was a really good time to be able to be inward and not to have to be so outward in the world.
Okay.
Down here, I started doing more like coaching artists and, a life coach, you know, because people come for specific things, which is never what they ultimately end up coaching on. So, today I was thinking, you know, happiness coach, that is like a really good, that is ultimately kind of like what I want to be doing now, because I feel like we all lead such accelerated lives and we're really, really not living in the moment. And our whole life, if we don't get in contact with the present moment, we live life continually in our head. And the life of an artist is so much like having to plan ahead and figuring it out and feeling like we're, you know, continually recreating who we are. We can end up in our head like way too much and kind of chasing happiness instead of I am happy today. And you know, if I could say one message to artists that are in business is, you know, and I say these words to myself too all the time, is like, how can we keep it simpler? You know, it, like you were just saying, you know, I only got one microphone and I'm going to be getting more. And this concept, and it's very American. I mean, I just went and spent some time in Mexico, and it's a very American thing that, you know, there's always more. And I remember one of the most profound experiences that I have. And it was when I was going through that, you know, am I an artist phase? I was probably right before I left here. I was, you know, early 20s. And I went to a Renaissance fair over in Sarasota. And I was leaving. I just got my Nikon camera. And that was getting me back to focusing my eye. That kind of gave me my world that I had lost back. My creative world became through the lens of a Nikon camera because I was distilling life and paying attention, right? I was getting in the moment, you know, photographing a woman on a horse. And so I had this kind of magical day with my new camera at the Renaissance Fair, and I was leaving, and there was a man sitting at the base of a tree, and he was selling little shells with little things that he had inked and painted on there, and they were $2. And one of the biggest epiphanies of my life is I looked at the shells and I looked at the man, and I thought, I will never want for anything in life, because life can be that simple. I can make things with my two hands, and people are going to want it. And
oh, that's nice.
And that has been my life. Anything that I've ever made, and I've made another very humbling thing, and I was probably 15 years into production business. And of course, we know that holidays are our busiest time. And so, it was probably 15 years before I woke up on a Christmas morning and realized that all the people all around the world that were opening gifts that I had touched with my hands.
Oh, that's nice.
And it
was
so much smaller, and it made my production art so much more meaningful. You know, I still have that with my, that's what I was saying, still my attachment with, like, you know, the greeting cards and plaques and tiles is they inspire people, they motivate people, and I have touched them with my hands, or, you know, somebody or, you know, in my company has done that. And that is a thread that unites us in a really beautiful way. You know, they're getting it. They're reading the message of choose good thoughts. They're seeing that I have a opportunity to choose good thoughts instead of bad thoughts. And that kind of shit's life changing, you know, it is.
Right.
So even in, you know, our production world, it's very important. You know, it's important work what we do, where arts are like the fabric, arts and crafting and what we do with our hands are like the fabric that weaves the planet together, you know?
Right. And we need to keep in touch with that. We can't let it go.
No, and I never take it for granted. I never take my hands for granted. You know, I never take the blessing of those realizations that, you know, I can make a life, you know, with my own hands and with the creativity that flows through me. And my book is about how we have our regular, you know, DNA. But my book is about, I believe, we have a spiritual DNA. And, you know, we talk about, you know, God or goddess or Allah or whatever as Buddha, as the creator. You know, the creator of what we have here, this universe. Well, our spiritual DNA is in touch. We are a part of all that. It's indivisible. And so what comes through us is who we truly are. You know, our creative energy and our creations of how we dress, how we decorate our homes, are all our creative expression of
How we speak, how we write,
all of it, how we interact with people, how we make eye contact or don't make eye contact, all of those things. We are constantly co-creating the universe. And I had that epiphany when I moved to California, back when I was 25, and I was walking to the BART train and, you know, just thinking about, you know, catching a BART train. And it was in this incubation period of, I know that I am more than, and I know that I'm, and it was this bolt of lightning that hit of, you co-create the universe. And, you know, it is, our creative selves are that, you know, it's our essence. Mm-hmm. Our creativity is our essence. And what gets in the way of that, what eclipses that light of, you know, the infinite being, is our thoughts, our procrastination, our perfectionism, our
expectations,
our criticisms of ourselves,
right.
Criticisms of others. You know, I'm getting ready. I'm going to be doing a webinar, you know, on my book. And it's very much that of those are the simple, when I talk about like distilling it down, those are the simple practices that buy us happiness, to become happy now and then grow our creative lives out of, you know, what are the things that we do to nurture the creative soil? You know, are we taking care of ourselves? Are we eating well? You know, are we a just like working 12 hours a day and frenetically trying to do the next thing for our business. You know, how do we nurture our soul?
Yeah. Right. And that's the thing. And it, that's the thing that gets by the wayside, that goes by the wayside. And it's not just nurturing our soul. It's just doing anything for ourselves, anything, because especially as women, as nurturers, we're always nurturing everybody else.
Yes.
But we're forgetting about ourselves.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And when we are full, we can spill over in really elegant ways, but we're depleted, we can't, we can't.
Okay.
And that's when we get defeated and feel like we can't do it. And that's when those voices creep in, when we're too tired, when we're too hungry, when we're not dealing with anger, you know, all of those places in life that can make us second guess ourselves or, lose the eye on the prize, lose our goals because it's like, oh, it happens to everybody else, but not me, And,
well, when you're in the middle of it, you don't realize it's happening to you.
No.
You're so caught up in the day to day. It isn't until 6 weeks later you get a second to breathe and you look back and you say, wow, those were crazy 6 weeks. And yes, I produced and did a lot, but how have I grown spiritually? How have I developed my inner being during that time period? Oops, I didn't.
Yeah.
I didn't have time to. I forgot to. I was caught up in so many other things.
The goal that I reached, which is well and good, but along the way, it's like, I was listening to Gabby Bernstein. I don't know if you've ever heard of her this morning. And she's like, she has great meditation. And she's like, we can all meditate for 11 minutes a day, and it's true. But how many days go by, or we can walk a mile, but how many days go by we don't do it? And it takes its toll, and it takes its toll on our psyche. To me, there's no greater thing that we can do in this life than develop the watchful observer of our thoughts, because what we think we ultimately become, because we are co-creators, so what we think we become, and even in our thoughts, we have adapted, we've taken on so much as, children. We learn everything through somebody else. It's not our own experience. So we have to learn how to experience our own life, not what we think we should do, what we, think other people want us to do, all of that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like getting the distance between our thoughts, which can run us and dictate us and take us down, wrong avenues that don't, feed us.
Right.
Or, we can just watch them and go, okay, I see that. I see that, I got kind of a stinky Facebook thing today and I'm going to obsess on it all day. It's like,
oh gosh.
No, that poor person, they must be having a really bad day. It has nothing to do with me, and move on.
Right.
I think that developing that, it can really help inform our life and then inform our creative expression in our business.
Well, you speak so eloquently about this. I can't wait to see the book, because you've deeply developed your ideas on this, which is wonderful. But you created a whole company called Choose Good Thoughts. How did that come about? And tell me about that.
That's a great story. A really hard story, because we all have our hard stories too. It's just,
yes.
I seem like a la la woo woo, but man, I have been through it. I lost my brother, who was like my child. And in this particular time, I was about to lose my son in a very similar way. He was abusing substances and driving drunk and on and on and on. And I was so, my only child, my baby, and I was so fragmented and exhausted from like trying to manage his life from afar, which I had no friggin' control over whatsoever. What happened was I got a call from him. He was living across the street at his dad's, that I begged him to take a cab. I knew he was like out partying or something. I mean, this is like a grown man too. He's probably in early 20s at the time. And, He told me he made it home. Well, actually, I got a knock on the door, and it was him. He had almost made it home and drove a little further and hit a tree. And this is 4 a.m., and I go walking with him down to the car, And as I'm going through the woods, I'm seeing flames like stories high. His car was completely on fire.
Oh, gosh.
And, you know, he like barely made it out. And so I got my ass to Al-Anon. If anybody's dealing kind of codependent issues or, you know, has alcoholic family members or was raised in alcoholic families, Al-Anon can be very helpful. Don't go to one meeting, go to many, because some of them are, you know, you're not going to resonate with. But in one meeting, it was a combination of people who were in AA and people who were in Al-Anon. And a man said in the meeting, which I wasn't sleeping, of course, because I'm trying to, you know, manage my boy's life. And he said, you know, it's just as easy to think good thoughts as bad thoughts. He didn't say choose good thoughts, but he's like, think good thoughts instead of bad thoughts. And a bulb went off of like, okay, 95% of what I worry about my son isn't going to happen. And if he's dead, I have to deal with it anyway. So, so why not start thinking good thoughts, choosing good thoughts about him, choosing. I mean, I had to like so mindfully pull myself up out of the, you know, gutter of despair and, you know, potential. And I'm back to my, you know, thoughts again. It's like, I was the one losing sleep. He wasn't losing sleep. I was the one losing sleep, you know?
Yeah, you were the one full of fear.
I was circling the drain and full of fear, all of that. So the more that I started choosing good thoughts about him, the more he started changing. And, of course, I'm changing. And, you know, his life is totally different, and it's a happy story. I'm going up to be with my son and his wife in Greenville in a couple of weeks to help them look for a house.
That's great.
But that is how the name Choose Good Thoughts. And I'm like, man,
okay.
I'm in the process now of selling this company because I know it can be like the next Life is Good. I knew when I
heard
this company, it was way bigger than me and where I am in my life now. You know, I am in the wisdom years of my life. I am, you know, in my lots of decades of living and this is for somebody who is younger and wants to just like take it out because we need the message, you know, and I've got, you know, designed the whole concept and stuff, but choosing thoughts is one huge thing we can do to change our life.
And that's wonderful. And you want the message out, whether it's you or somebody else.
I want it out in a huge way. I want it global. I want it, you know, I'm so excited about that.
That's great.
I birthed it and it's not mine. And it's like, okay, whose is it? And I just actually, I presented it to Mike Dooley. I don't know if you've heard of him, of The Secret. And I presented the company to him, like last month.
Great.
And, he's got lots going on and it wasn't for him, but you know, I'm getting it to like people out there and now I'm here too.
You're not afraid to think big. That's
great. No. I didn't start thinking big, and there's parts of me that, you know, there's a saying about, you know, if we only knew how small we really play, and I still feel that about myself, you know, it's like we have such big things in us, we all do, and yet all the messages that we get to play smaller and all the shiny objects that we chase that keep us away from our power and our genius work in the world. And so, you know, that's another thing for, you know, artists and creatives to think about is like, what's genius work? What lights me on fire? What really excites me? And it might not be the business of it. It might be like, oh man, I do want to work. I'd rather work 20 hours, you know, waitressing a week or, you know, bartending and be in a studio and be surrounded by other artists. You know, that might be what sets you on fire. Don't let the thought of what you should be dictate what you should be. Don't let the thought of, you know, because so often, you know, how many people own RVs and how many RVs are for sale? You know, how many people have a dream about like owning an RV and driving cross country? When they actually retire and buy it, most of them sell it. How much bodybuilding equipment is ever used? You know, 5%, 95% ended up in. What do we really want? Dig down deep, find out, take the time, you know, take the classes that makes you like really, really look at how you want your life to roll out. Cause it goes by fast. We hear it. I'm here to tell it. Getting on the other end of the spectrum of life.
Here to
say, even though I dug in deep and I've had a huge life, it goes by so freaking fast.
Right. Well, you've done so much. Yeah. Yeah. If you sell Choose Good Thoughts because you want it to become bigger, yep. That won't stop you from creating. You're still going to do other things. Yep. What's next on the horizon besides your book, which I know that's a huge project?
Yep. It's speaking. It's, speaking on more national stage. Getting ready to sign up for a TED Talks in Jacksonville.
Congratulations.
I'm not, but it's like it, and it terrifies me, and I do hard things, it's just like, I'll do things that terrify me. And
great. All right. Yeah. You're a good role model.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And I've already started a new company name, of course, because I love to name companies, and I've had tons of company names. This Mindful Moment.
Oh, very nice.
And,
And what will the gist of that company be?
I don't know. Right now, it's just an Etsy store that I need to upload some stuff in.
I saw that you have a lot of jewelry in there. You're still making a lot of jewelry.
I do. I like the zen of jewelry making. It keeps.
I do too.
And it, don't you? It like yeah. A chair and
It's very calming to me to sort through to make a design, and so to rearrange beads, and this goes here, and no, it goes six beads over, and no, this goes with that. That's very soothing to me to just rearrange and make a pattern before I actually do any of the stringing or construction.
Yep.
Yeah, I love that.
Me too. Yeah, there's something very zen about it,
Yeah.
The moment of creating.
Okay, so This Mindful Moment. Yeah, I like that. That's a great name. Yeah. You are good at making names, creating names.
I love creating names. I have 4 book titles already.
That's great, yeah. Yeah, you need quite a few lifetimes to do everything.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I think, we all do. And when we get into the creative flow that's there, it pours through us. I remember my ex-sister-in-law who was working on her master's in art, and this was, 30-something years ago, and I went and stayed at her parents' house, and of course I was, making stuff the whole time I was there. She looked at me. It's kind of disgusting, but it's so true. She looked at me. She goes, "You vomit ideas." It's just like, but it's such a visual thing. But
yeah,
that is who we are. We are a conduit for, creation. And so to find our own unique expression of it is just so valuable. Our, like I had said before, what is our work in the world, and our, what is our highest creative expression? What makes us most excited?
Because it'll make somebody else excited. If it makes you excited, it will inspire somebody else.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And then make them rise to their own, genius work and their highest expression of themselves.
Yeah. I read this business book one time, and it reminded me of it because you're using the term genius work. What they said was, when you're helping somebody out with a product or a service or something that you're doing for your business, you want it to solve the migraine problem, because you're not just solving something little. You're not just making something that they may want today. They may not want it tomorrow. You want something that they want when they are at their extreme need, when they have a migraine.
Yes.
And they call it you're solving the migraine problem.
Yes.
And I kind of like that analogy, because you have to think bigger.
Yep.
You have to think to the migraine. You don't just stop with something small.
Yes.
And that's like what you're doing with Choose Good Thoughts. You don't think that you have, well, I'm sure you do have, you do have the means to make it a huge company, but it's just not something that you desire to do. You want to find somebody else who can make it something big.
Absolutely.
But the potential's
there. Absolutely. Yeah. See that.
Yeah.
But, and part of it, too, is that we are so distracted in the world today. I want to make an app, and I don't even know that if it's out there, but how many times we touch our devices a day? Would that be a good mindfulness app? Because we are, and I'm totally guilty of it. I'm not, none of this is preaching to the choir. You know, I am like the sheep with everybody else. And, you know, we are distracted, and what we are distracted from is our life, the moment that we are living now. So the more that we can bring it in, the more we are in the flow, and the more what we want to manifest can talk to us. You know, if we're continually like making lists are great and all of that, but if we're continually in the thought process and not in the allowing process, intuition, I have a plaque and it says, in the quiet mind, intuition finds voice. And it's the same with in the quiet mind, creativity finds
breath.
Oh, I got to write that down.
Yeah, I had to think about that for a second. I like that. Yeah.
Creativity finds expression in the more quiet moments, you know, because like me, I can invent like 5 new businesses tonight and they could all be, you know, selling stuff within a week. Is that coming through, or is that just like my mind, like, okay, because I'm in that flow, you know?
Right.
The flow is great and it's energizing and all of that. And then there's also allowing the time to create the space to kind of be followed by the flow and say, that's it, you know, instead of always kind of trying to think it up and what's the next thing and what's on the list and.
Right. And I think that what I've seen, because I do have a daughter in high school, I have a son who's out of college and working, but I feel more so her at the younger age, they never have quiet time.
Right.
They never do, because there's always the device and there's always somebody beeping something to them. And the quiet time has to be so forced and created, because it doesn't come natural anymore.
It doesn't.
So it has to be, we're going to go out for a hike and we're going to hike through the woods. And of course you're not going to be sitting there with your phone. You won't even have coverage or whatever they call it.
Yeah.
And, so it's forced, it's created. It's like a scheduled thing instead of it being the natural state of your life. The natural state of your life is not quiet anymore.
No, it's not.
No,
and we have to pencil in those walks in nature, those nurturing meals that we're actually listening to the knife hit the cutting board, you know, bringing it back to that place, that moment. Because if not, we never truly live our life, and we get to the end of our life and go, wow, it all went by. And I was a bystander. You know, I was somebody else, you know, my mind like pulled.
I was counting likes, counting likes on my device.
And been there and I do that. And so, today I'm like, okay, I'm mindfully going to do this Gabby Bernstein practice for 40 days of 11 minutes of meditation. That goes on list, you know, with all the other things that like, you know, motivate us and all of that, you know, put those things on the list that get us to what we really want to manifest and, you know, how we grow in that manifestation, you know, of ourselves. And that's, you know, that's the name of my book, Craft Your Creative Life. What do you want it to look like? You know, not from an assumption, not from my first thing where I see people doing craft shows going, that's what I want to do. That looks so glamorous and fun. You know, I did it, and I did it for a long time. Was that the best use of my time? I don't know. I mean, I've had a great, great life, but if I had created more space back then, would it have been, you know, and no remorse, just the question.
Right.
What does more space? Because everything in life is either form, it's either tangible or space, and space is infinite. And so we limit ourselves to form. Our thoughts are forms because, you know, they're like real inside of our head. But what about all the space around us? What about the infinite space? What about the galaxies? That gets us in touch with who we really are. And this is just a little bitty old flash in the pan here, and get right. What's real and do, you know, and do it well, because, you know, we are infinite beings, and, you know, what we do ultimately doesn't matter, but touching people, building communities, the things that feed our soul, doing creative work, you know, that is important. But what is it that, you know, what is the creative work that, we really want to be known for? You know, what do you want on your gravestone? Because it's going to say something. I'm going to say build a right. house with closets. because the life can get so disorganized that, right. you know, all we're doing is like throwing shit out of our closets, trying to find what we really want, you know, or yeah. going through our Michael's supply store of crafts to find what we really want instead of, you know, weeding out what do we really love? What are elegant choices? These are things in my book. You're getting the preview of my book, but.
All right.
you know, looking through a kind of a lens of, from that stepping back place, you know, looking at our life. Gee, I ran around a lot yesterday and didn't get much accomplished, you know?
Right. But,
you know,
yeah. Or I did. I checked 12 items off my to-do list, but was I happy, or did I get happier
right.
during the day?
Do you want your gravestone to say, I checked 12 items off my to-do list?
Right.
You
know? Right.
Like,
yeah.
I talked to my daughter today and had a great communication, or, you know,
right.
I connected mm-hmm. with this person around the world and, you know, had a meaningful exchange. You know, people poo-poo, you know, because there are beautiful things that have come about because of Facebook. I mean, I've met people all around the world
they
that
are.
I never
yeah.
would have met. You know, it's like using things for their highest use, their highest and best use,
yes.
you know, instead of mindlessly using them. You know, it's the highest and best use. Probably if I put my phone away and just checked it like every 3 hours, you know, that's probably a higher and better use of than. You know, I turned my pinger off my phone. There's nothing to me more crazy making than your phone pinging all the time.
Right.
You know, and we feel like we have to react.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Well, they're interrupting you and telling you what you need to do right now. Right. Even if you may be sitting there quietly reading a book,
yep.
they're telling you, nope, don't read that book.
Yep.
You need to look and respond to me.
Yep. Yep. And then actually yeah. be something that we want to sell you on there too.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So where can people find you on the internet? What is your website that kind of summarizes?
Well, actually, I am Art by Elaine is one that I'm closing down right now. And that's got a lot more art and stuff on it. But I am moving into Elaine Kelly, ElaineKelley.com. So I'm just building that new website now. And
I'll put that in the show notes on all the links.
Yeah. And then choosegoodthoughts.com is another website. And
then you have This Mindful Moment on Etsy.
Yes.
Where people can see jewelry.
Yeah. And if you go on ElaineKelley.com, there's a drop down, I think, for Choose Good Thoughts and for my Etsy store there.
Okay. All right. I'll do all the links.
And I am in the part right now with my web person of relinking stuff and all, but if you want to get a hold of me and like I do one-on-one coaching or get on my list, because I don't have my sign up yet for my email on my new website yet, but
okay,
yeah, you can always just you know, message me or like I'm on Elaine Kelley. I have a business page and a personal page, so you can always hop on Facebook too and catch that.
Okay, great. Yeah, good, good. Well, you've given us so many things to think about, and you speak so positively and from a place of happiness. I think I don't know if that's because you've done so many things and you've figured things out, or you started out this way. I kind of think you probably started out always a happy person.
No, I was a very sad person in my early.
No,
I will tell that, but I started a spiritual quest, and I I think it's Gabby that says happiness is an inside job. Somebody says it. It's so true.
Okay.
Because I grew my happiness, and that's what my book is about, basically. From not happy at all, and food obsessed, drugs, alcohol, all of that.
And you came out the other side.
My book opens with me driving off a 20-foot cliff in an MG midget as I hit third gear and the lines in the road end. So,
oh my gosh,
it was not a suicide attempt. It wasn't a Thelma and Louise, but you know, that woke me up. And
I think you've come a long way since that moment, for sure. And thank you so much for sharing and being so open and giving with your talk to us today. It's been wonderful.
I really enjoyed it. And good luck in your new endeavor. I'm so happy
for you.
And I'm so happy for you building your tribe. And it's very, very important to build connections, community, and not feel like we're alone, because artists can be a lonely job. So, you know, you're making it not.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you very much. Yeah. All right, bye-bye.
All right, be well. Bye-bye.
I hope you enjoyed hearing Elaine Kelly talk about her art businesses. She talks in a most interesting way about art and life that most of my takeaways today are direct quotes from her. Here are some of my favorites. Number one, your life is good if you can make things with your hands. The things that you make touch other people's lives. That's important work that you do. I think all artists need to keep this in mind. Number two, we have a spiritual DNA. What comes through us is who we truly are. We are constantly co-creating the universe. And that's one to really think about. Number three, not eating well, not sleeping well will take a toll on your psyche. Number four, you need to develop a watchful observer of your thoughts. And I think that's essentially saying mindfulness. Let's do this. Number five, what informs your life can inform your creative expression in your business. Number six, it's just as easy to think good thoughts as bad thoughts, so why not choose good thoughts? And that is something she has called her new business. Number seven, artists and creatives need to think about what is their genius work? What is it that excites them? And number eight, we are distracted from the moments of our life, and we need to work to get to a quiet mind. Creativity finds expression in the quiet moments. And that's really something we need to remind ourselves about. Aren't they wonderful things that she's talked about? Thank you to Elaine Kelly for speaking so honestly and profoundly to me. And thank you for listening to the Left Brain Artist Podcast. I'm Suzanne Redman. See you next time.